Do I have a treat for you all today? There is nothing better, apparently, than pizza and tiki drinks. And the guest I have on today is Salar from My Pie Pizza. And as you're listening to this conversation, it's going to be hard for you not to fall in love with the demographic that this subculture, subgenre of tiki fans, it's going to be hard for you not to want to bring them in because they are loyal. And that's what you need in the business. You need your loyal people. And you're going to be encouraged not to go off and chase the trend. But still, we are going to be talking about restaurant trends. So definitely stick to the very end so that you can hear all of them. This is an amazing episode. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And remember to always ask, what's good dough?
We're going to start off hot because you said we're really busy right now. And we don't need to do any extra marketing. We're holding off. Good flex. How does a pizzeria, in your opinion, get to that level?
I think it's by setting yourself apart. At My Pie, we're a pretty unique pizzeria or restaurant. Like we're not like a pizzeria and that we're like mostly a takeout spot. Primarily, we're a tiki bar. And
tiki bar.
Yeah, so it's like very immersive. The outside of our building is completely black. We've covered up the windows. There's barely a sign. We're not in a great neighborhood. I live there. I wanted to open something up that was like a 3-minute walk from my house and like do something where I live and like build something that'll like bring people there. And like people that are looking for our spot have a hard time finding it sometimes. but like as soon as you walk in, it's like very immersive, completely decorated. So like having it plain on the outside, it's to have that feeling of like that whoa feeling, like when you walk in and you're like, what did I like just discover?
Yeah.
And that's what I find like a lot of people, they get that feeling of like, well, like I found something and then like they want to share that with their friends. Like we get a lot of people that, you know, like make a point of telling us like, you know, like, oh, I'm bringing my friend for the first time or like, you know, like I'm bringing my family or like I had to show them this.
So it's kind of, I like that. It makes sense because when I talk to friends and homies, like, what is the topic of conversation? Where did you eat that was really cool? Like, yeah. Where do you recommend?
Yeah, that's my entire life revolves around that.
what do they say specifically? So they say cool vibe. They say what else?
Just, you know, they feel like they've gone on vacation. They feel like it's like we have a good combination of everything, good food, good drinks, good service, good atmosphere. For a dine-in restaurant, you know, I think it's expensive for pizza, but it's not expensive for a dine-in meal. Like two people can get like a big sharing cocktail and like a small pizza that's good enough that'll fill two people for like $50.
A person or total?
No, total. And yeah, I mean, I think like we've done like a good job of kind of like hitting all the points.
How did you come to that conclusion that those were the points you had to hit?
Eating a lot of places, you know, I've been in food for like 10 years now. So like I've picked up some things along the way. My Pie was my first, restaurant before this. I had a couple of takeout spots and I had a food truck, and I started doing pop-ups. So like, it's been very gradually working my way up to like, now we're like a full service dine-in restaurant. But also, you know, bringing in the right people to fill in all the gaps that I have. So like with this place, I didn't know anything about front of house. So I just made sure I had good people in the front to take care of all of that. And like, I found like, you know, like with good people, like you just kind of share what's important to you and trust them to handle it.
Would you recommend, if you had to do it all over, starting from small and gradually getting to the brick and mortar?
I think in my situation, I would, because before I worked in food, I worked in IT for 13 years and I never actually worked in a restaurant before. So I was coming with like zero knowledge. And like, I've always been lucky enough to just work in places where, like, when I had my food truck, I worked out of like a commissary kitchen where there was a mix of people
sure.
that were really experienced, and then also like a lot of people that were just starting.
Yeah.
So that, like, there was a lot of good energy of like people excited about it, and but there's also lots of people that were there to like help you out and share knowledge. So like, you know, if you had questions for them, they'd answer them and they'd help you out.
What were some of the downsides of going through those levels and not opening your brick and mortar right away?
It's slower, but I mean, I think I like it that way because I've never taken investors or had to, you know, I've gone into debt. I've taken out loans and I've maxed out credit cards to open places, but I've always been able to do things the way that I wanted to. And like, didn't have to compromise on things, you know. I think once you're working with someone else's money, there's a priority of like making sure that they're taken care of. And I mean, that's just the way it is. So, you know, I think there's things if like you wanted to make a choice that might be better for like, say, like the people that you're working with, as opposed to just making the maximum amount of money, it can be harder to make those choices.
Interesting. Because for me, you know, getting to max out my credit cards, going into a lot of debt kind of scares me.
Oh yeah. And it's terrifying.
But working with an investor, I think the upside to that is sometimes they're not silent partners. Sometimes that's the downside. And you can look to them for where your deficiencies are in the business.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
How do you feel about that?
I think with the right person, it would work. That's just, I've never had to do it, and I haven't come across that person, so I just haven't crossed that bridge yet.
Yeah.
But I'm not like completely closed off to it.
Okay. So you'd consider.
Yeah.
Tight.
But, I feel you on the terrifying part. MyPie, we opened January of 2020. And we were the entire concept is built around being dine-in.
Uh-huh.
We had zero plans to do delivery, uh-huh. and we had like in my business plan, it was like 5% takeout max. The first weekend of lockdown, we just decided we do delivery now, and you know, like whoever was working front of house that had cars said they would drive. And we figured out real quick that it's not that simple. It's like very hard to sort out the logistics of delivery. And I had like a bit of a breakdown that first weekend. And then we like closed the next weekend, just rearranged the entire dining room to like be like, okay, this is gonna be a while. So we need to like set up a proper takeout system. We were working with someone who helped switch out our tech for takeout and streamline it, and yeah, went from there.
Is takeout still a big part of your business today?
It is, yeah. So we're probably about a quarter to a third of food sales are takeout still.
Interesting. Yeah, because I imagine with what you're optimizing for, the vibe and everything, you'd want people to come in and enjoy the meal and the ambiance and all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the pizza is better like when you get it right out of the oven. And like, the whole thing is about, yeah, like coming in and getting the full experience. So very much like we set up our takeout to be based around the number of reservations we have. So like we look at how many people are coming in at each time, and then we kind of go from there and say like, okay, we can do this many takeout spots like per half hour slot.
Oh, so you're prioritizing the people who are in-house.
Yeah. And not in that like, you know, like you'll get your pizza and like takeout people will have to wait. We just put a limit on takeout.
Got it.
Just based on what we'll be able to handle in the kitchen without, and also like, I don't want to just kind of keep throwing things at kitchen and like get people burnt out. And it's just trying to be like conscious of what like a proper workload is.
How do you set up that limit? Is it like a daily limit, hourly limit based on staffing?
We go on half hour time slots for pickup. And then we just base it like, you know, we've got like a good idea of how parties work and like group sizes, you know, like if it's a table of two, they're going to come in and order right away. If it's a table of 10, they usually take half an hour. So like we kind of look at how it's going to lay on the schedule for the day and just pick it out from there.
And you sort of allocate, an educated guess on how many pies that the 10 top is going to order?
Yeah. There's a range. It's not perfect. Sometimes you get a table of 10 that orders 4 larges to share, and sometimes they order 12 smalls. So no matter what, it can still get crazy, but that's part of the reason we're trying not to overwhelm the kitchen. And then we want to make sure pizzas come out in a good amount of time and not rushing anything.
Why focus on not overwhelming the kitchen when you could focus on maximizing profits? What about you makes that your priority?
It's important to me because I've seen too many people that work in kitchens where they just get everything thrown at them, and burnout is a big thing. And I have good people in my kitchen, and they keep the place going, and I want to keep them.
Why did you leave IT?
Before I went into IT, I was either going to cook or I was going to go into IT. And one of my cousins, he's a chef now. He's been a chef all his life, but he started working the year before I had to choose. And he was a dishwasher somewhere, and I was talking to him, and he was just telling me how terrible it is. Which I mean, if you work in restaurants,
got to start somewhere.
From my understanding, is you start at the bottom and you work your way up, and you get used to working weekends and holidays and everything. And I was in high school then, so that sounded awful to me. So I went into IT, and then I'd always been cooking, and I started doing. We moved to the city we live in now, and I had a big backyard and a workshop. So I had, space to build a smoker, and I started, playing around a lot with that and doing barbecue competitions. And then, I started an Instagram for that, and people just started asking where they can buy what I'm making. And it kind of spun out of control from there.
Is that barbecue Instagram still around?
It is. It's not active. But it's Meat Ventures. That was my food truck as well.
Mm-hmm. And you have a very unique name now. Where does that come from?
The name My Pie, a friend of mine came up with it. We were at a tiki bar in Detroit, actually. And it's probably the most classic tiki drink is the Mai Tai. Mm. So she said, well, it's pizza and a tiki bar, so it's got to be My Pie.
And it's spelled M-A-I-P-A-I.
Yep.
I like that. Aside from just that experience of we're in a tiki bar, it's in Detroit, why did you decide to carry over that theme to your restaurant? Or did you?
Well, I had a couple of takeout places, and I was looking to do something else. And two of the ideas I had in my head were either do a tiki bar or Detroit style pizza place. And this space that we're in came up, and it was 3 minutes away from where I live. It was a big space, had a kitchen there already. It had a full line, walk-in fridge. It needed a lot of work, cosmetically, but everything that you needed in a kitchen was there, and the rent was cheap. So I said, we'll just do both. We'll try it.
Yeah.
Try it and see what happens.
And it worked.
Yeah.
What was the hardest thing about building up a space that's so big?
It's a lot of work. I mean, our space it's a very immersive experience because I built so much in it. It's completely unrecognizable from what it was before. And there's layers and layers of building. And it's building stuff, you can't really...
What specifically?
So our booths are all, they're like bamboo huts with thatching, thatched roofs, lots of lights. Lighting is very important. It's very dark. It's a lot of colored lighting.
Yeah.
A lot of the decorations are vintage or they're handcrafted. There's stuff in there that I've carved personally and stuff. We have stuff in there from over 100 different artists. There's a lot to look at. There's lots of little details. It's very much it's supposed to be overwhelming. You know, like people come in and they say, like, every time I come in, you know, like I notice something new, because like I'm also always adding stuff too.
Yeah.
So there's lots of lighting, lots of stuff to look at. And it's just fun. It's fun. And then, it's a big space. So when I first opened, I only opened half of it. The far side is 30 seats and we open with that. And then, over like COVID lockdowns, I slowly built the restaurant side. And that was another 46 seats.
You build it yourself?
Yeah.
For the most part?
Yeah.
Damn.
It kept me sane. It gave me something to do.
Kept your expenses down.
Over lockdown, yeah. Yeah, we were going to try to like really fast forward it. And we had contractors lined up to do some parts of it. But, you know, like as soon as lockdown started, it's like, I can't spend.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't know what's going to happen. Everything was like very uncertain.
Sheesh.
And it ended up being fine. Like people were very supportive. We were open for 2.5 months. So we did have like, you know, like we got word out that we were open and, you know, we were fortunate in that like you didn't have to convince people to get pizza for takeout.
Yeah.
So if anything, like we streamlined our menu a bit so that, you know, we'd have less people in the kitchen and also just like get orders out quick. And yeah.
What are those things that you did to streamline it?
At first we completely cut our fryer station. So like our menu was like just pizza and dips. And then, we slowly started to like add stuff back as we figured out, our takeout system and how to get everything working.
Hmm. Was it hard to let go of what I imagine French fries and chicken wings?
Yeah. I mean, I really like them and it is like, it's nice to like, you know, everything adds up for your average sale. So, you know, like the more like focused stuff you have that makes sense that people order together, the better.
Pre-bagged French fries or hand cut?
I am very partial to waffle fries. I did waffle fries on my food truck and I just love them because I also love like doing like a lot of sauces or like tossing them in something and they've got a coating that really stands up to it.
Like what?
So like our signature fry dish is we call them parm fries. But we toss them. We make kind of like a buffalo sauce.
Yeah.
It's with gochujang.
Uh-huh.
So gochujang and butter. And we toss them and then just like smother them in freshly shaved parm and green onions.
Nice. And so I was going to say waffle fries are definitely at the top for me. Not my favorite, I would say. Oddly enough, I love hot chicken. And every place that I go to in the Bay Area, they do crinkle cut.
And yeah, crinkle cut made a comeback, right?
I think that
like Shake Shack brought them back. Because I feel like I hadn't seen them. The only time before that I remember crinkle cut is like if my mom was making fish and chips, like in the oven.
Mm.
Other than that, like I didn't see anywhere serving them.
Yeah. No, interesting. Going back to... adapting. Did you have to let your people go during COVID or were you able to manage?
We tried to hold on to as many people as we could. I mean, for front of house, we didn't have enough. Like we didn't have anything. We did end up like we kept more people on than I guess like we needed to. But you know, it was part of like, I wanted to make sure that we had them when we were back.
The business needed to stay afloat. Yeah. Oh, well, the question that I had prior to the French fry deviation was like building something. Could you describe it as eclectic?
Definitely.
Yeah. Building something eclectic. Is this to you like a long-term hold? Like I'm never going to sell? Or are you sort of embracing the fact that like, if I do have to sell, I might take a big L on it because it's not for anyone else's taste but mine.
I mean, I've never really built any of my businesses like with the thought of selling them.
Interesting.
This one, I mean, I think I might eventually. I'm not really like thinking about it yet, but I think there's like a way where I could kind of spin it where, you know, like right now we're open 4 nights a week and just for dinner. So you could say like, look, like this is, you know, like we're busy four nights. There's potential, like you want to open more nights, you want to open days, you know, like it's there for you to work with. So there's like potential for you to add on to it, but you can see like right now it's making money as is.
Okay. I didn't even think about like just looking at sales in general. I was more talking about like assuming the space, like irregardless of sales. Like some people look at it and say, okay, the sales work, but this is not, I guess if it was just to take over the existing pizza spot.
Right.
Yeah. But if they were going to do a whole different concept, it'd be a little bit hard.
Yeah. I don't think it wouldn't make sense to try to sell it to someone that didn't want to own a tiki bar.
Yeah. There you go. You have to just look for that specific audience that is interested.
Yeah. And I think like for someone that was interested in that, they'd be pretty stoked. We've got some good stuff in there.
Who is that demographic and what is up with the fascination? Because it's around. There's even one in Vegas.
Yeah. Oh, there's a few here now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, is it like Star Wars, but just smaller? People just are die hard.
Sort of. Yeah, sort of. I mean, it's just like one of those like cultural subgenres, you know, like some people get like super heavily into it. For me, I just always love that feeling of going in somewhere and like feeling like I'm somewhere else. And like, I love that, you know, like you'll never go in a tiki bar with TV. There's usually no windows or they're covered up.
Yeah.
It's like you just go in and you're like, this is like, you're here now. I think the oldest one in Vegas is Frankie's Tiki Room. That's a good one. That was the first one I ever went to, and that was probably like 13 or 14 years ago.
What feeling did you get from going to that? Because it wasn't just Frankie's. You went to one in Detroit, and so you kept it going. But like, what kept you going?
I just love that feeling of like, oh, like I'm like, it's just like a total mind shift. Like it's just a shift in perspective. Like you walk in and you're like, cool, like I'm somewhere else. You know, like it's very, I think it's helpful for people like to kind of like, you know, I'm going to forget about like all the shit I'm worried about and just relax, have a good time with my friends. You know, it's easier to like not pay attention to your phone because, you know, like you feel like you've left that behind. And I think, you know, especially like people need that more than ever.
Yeah. I can't remember the name. Do you know the name of the place here that does pizza and tiki?
Red Dwarf.
Red Dwarf Inn. Yeah. I went there with Arthur Bovino, Michael Fox, and Pepe. I don't know, something with a G from Italy. It was just like a moment in time. It was in a questionable neighborhood. We didn't know if my rental car was going to get broken into. We couldn't find the place.
Yep.
It didn't look like it was open. We walk in through this strange door that looked like you, I don't know, might not come out if you go in.
Yeah.
But when you're in there, you meet just like wonderful people. Everyone's happy. And it did like provide this space where we were just fully present with one another. I remember the conversations. I remember like opening up and venting to them. And just getting feedback and like talking and having smiles and fun. It was really cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Do you see that same kind of thing happening in your place?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We get a lot of celebrations. So we get a lot of people coming in for birthdays and anniversaries, you know, people coming in on dates. We've got like one area that's kind of like our like little private area and it's more a lounge. It's like almost completely closed in and it's like completely surrounded with plants. And it's more like, instead of a dining table, we have like a big coffee table and lower seats all around. So like people just kind of come in and chill and have drinks and have pizza.
That sounds dope.
I think like part of the thing, most tiki bars, a lot of them don't do food, or they do food that's kind of like, you know, like it's like pseudo Polynesian, like appetizer menu.
Sure.
Like there's really like not much focus on the food.
Right.
There's some exceptions, but for the most part, it's just kind of like
the drinks.
Almost filler.
Yeah. Oh, got it.
So yeah, I think like having it, having good food and good drinks and a good atmosphere, you're just giving people more reasons to come in.
Let's talk about pan pizzas for a quick second. What are you using to press out your dough? I found out that whatever fat you use greatly affects the flavor of your pizza. And that is why the only brand I trust with my pizza is Cordo Olive Oil. Taste is everything, and other brands and other fats pale in comparison. Do you want to taste the difference? Go to cordo-olive.com using the link in the show notes. You can purchase a bottle there, or if you're an operator, you can get a free tasting. Just message me and I'll connect you with them. I'll leave my contact in the show notes. Thank you, Cordo Olive Oil, for sponsoring the podcast. One of the things pizza makers spend the most money on is cheese. Every time I have a catering event, cheese is my biggest ingredient cost. But what if I told you there's a cheese company out there that lets you earn cash back for every pound of cheese purchased? I'm talking about Baggio Cheese. And their Gold Club Rewards members receive their rewards card every month that can be used wherever Visa is accepted. So the more cheese you buy, the more you can earn. Literally, you get paid to use Baggio Cheese. Now that is cool. Learn more at Baggio Cheese using the link in the show notes. What makes a tiki bar not work? Because like, if there's a cult following, if it's a great place, you know, it could be something that someone listening to is interested in building. What mistakes should they avoid if they want to venture into that route?
To be honest, I think if you're looking at opening a tiki bar and you don't understand it well enough to answer that for yourself, then you're probably doing it for the wrong reasons. Like you're doing it because you think like, oh, like, look what's like, you know, this looks cool. Or like, look what's, you know, I see these places opening and like, maybe like they're trendy or something. And you just, you know, like you would know like what makes sense and like what people would like, not even what people like. I think more importantly, like you have to like do it. Like you have to do what you like.
Are tiki bars making a comeback like crinkle fries are? Do you see it trendy? I imagine you're more tapped in.
I see a few more. I don't know that it's like, I wouldn't say it's like huge, but there's definitely like some new ones opening.
Because the demographic of people who own those tiki bars would skew older, right? No?
I don't know. I think it's a pretty big range now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Would you, it being a bar, with it being a bar, you're open for dinner.
Yep.
Would you ever consider, or have you considered doing like a lunch takeout, DoorDash, something like that?
I haven't yet. Right now, like with our dough process and like our panning and proofing process, like we open for dinner at 4:30 and we start that process at 7:30 in the morning. So we're just, you know, I always look at like, I always, you know, like as a business owner, I know no matter what job there is, I've worked every position there. Like I've bartended, I've served, I've done dishes, I've hosted, cooked, everything. So I know like if there's a shift that exists, I'm going to do it at some point. And I always feel like if I don't want to do it, I shouldn't expect someone else to do it. And I think that includes getting up at like 2 a.m. to start panning dough so that we can be ready for lunch.
Dude, I worked with Al the Pizza Buddha and he was like, yeah, come with me to Acre Pizza. You can see the production. I'm like, cool. What time is that? And they're like, oh, they start at 2:00. And I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, which I mean, it's fine. Like, I got nothing against that. Like, I just don't want to do it.
Yeah.
The same thing, like, you know, we're a bar, but we don't run bar hours. Like, we're usually closed by midnight Friday and Saturday. Because I don't want to be open. I don't want to be up till 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And like, I also like, I don't want to deal with, I guess, like a bar crowd. I like, it's, you know, it's more chill. Like people come in for dinner, they have a couple of drinks maybe, and that's it.
Seems like you really love this and you love the energy, you love being so close to your house, you love the food that you make, the people that you attract. And I'm curious, is there a world where you step away and let your team do their thing outside of Expo, you know what I mean? And maybe even long term to go do other things or whatever.
I'm definitely thinking about it, and like I have been stepping away for longer and longer periods of time. You're still figuring out all the little parts where it's like, you know, like more things that I should delegate or things that I shouldn't be handling, and getting those taken care of. And it is like, it's more, and I'm finding like it's freeing up more of my time to, you know, like to work on new things for the business and outside of it. And, you know, like you need that, you know, like they say, like you need to not be working in your business to have time to work on your business. And that's definitely true. Like if you're constantly on the line, there is just no time or no energy. You don't have energy or mental space to step back and like actually look and see like, okay, like how are we actually performing? You know, like what marketing is effective, you know, like what products should we be pushing or adding? You can't, it's impossible.
What are some of the things that you delegated right away when you started implementing this? Not saying you've delegated everything, right? Because you're just working on it. But what are the first things that you said, hey, please take this off my hand?
For the most part, definitely doing like working on the line during service. So I still do, but it's mostly like in testing and covering people like when they're away. But I don't usually like regularly have like shifts scheduled. Just because that is to me that was like the biggest amount of time. I do make sure that like I spend a lot of time in there, keep an eye on everything and like testing everything, making sure everything's still, you know, being done the way it should be. And yeah, that was probably the first thing.
You made sure you were properly staffed so that they can run without you, is essentially. Has that helped your business? Like, have you done it long enough to where you can say, oh, this was a great move? Because I imagine initially when you're saying I'm going to staff up and I'm not going to rely on my labor, then it sort of cuts into profits. No?
Yeah, it does. But you know, like it frees up time where, you know, like now we've had time to work on, we're working on a new cocktail menu. We're working on expanding our food menu a little bit. And like looking at where it makes sense to like really dial it in and say like, you know, like this is not going to overwhelm any one station in the kitchen, and it's going to make sense. Like in, you know, like, will this make sense to order with like what the rest of the menu looks like?
Interesting.
And is it going to like cannibalize sales from something else, or is it just going to be like a pure add-on?
What do you mean by cannibalize sales?
I think if you just, you know, if you just add a bunch of appetizers, without thinking about how they work together, you know, you could end up with just the same amount of appetizer sales, but it's just split a different way, because they're, you know, like you're adding things that are too similar to each other. So they're going to be ordered like one or the other rather than it being like a complement to where it's like, oh, like let's get this and that.
Ah, give me a concrete example. I know what you're talking about, but I can't.
You know, like I think if
what are
if,
two apps that you wouldn't offer together?
It's tough. I think it, like adding a bunch of different things that are fried, compared to like having like, you know, like maybe like a pickled item or like a cold dip or something that is distinct enough and like has a different eating experience and flavor profile.
I'm trying to think of like the restaurants that I've been at where I've sat down and, you know, everyone gets a turn ordering and we're just like, why didn't we order something else? Like, I don't know. I think I do think of fried food though, specifically, just because it all kind of, you get the taste of fryer and it's like, yeah, you're okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. And then, you know, like now that we've had more time or now that I've had more time, we've added a lot more merch. So that's becoming a bigger part of our sales mix. You know, we just got a custom glass made. We're working on like getting our first custom tiki mug made. This is almost a year long process. So we got to get it designed. We have to get like a prototype sculpted, send it out, get a mold made, then samples come back. And then, we have to order, I think it's like 500 or 1,000 at a time. So it's a commitment, you know, like you have to take the time to make sure it's a good design and that it's something that people are going to want Otherwise, you're sitting on 1,000 of them.
What do you do to test that? To test that people want it?
I think that that's where, like with Tiki mugs, it's either you're making something that is generic enough and somewhat appealing enough that you can sell it at a low price point, or something that has like a nice paint job and will appeal to like what people are looking for, like collectors are looking for, at a higher price point, and like do it more like a limited edition.
You're going the other route though.
We're going kind of in the middle.
In the middle.
Yeah.
Interesting. Why focus on that specifically? Design? Is it just an itch? Is it something you've always wanted to do?
One of the things I think is somewhat unique about like the business model for Tiki Bars is that there's a lot of people that really are into, like people that go to a lot of Tiki Bars will collect souvenirs from each one. They'll buy mugs, they'll buy shirts, stickers, pins. So if you don't have that stuff and they're looking for it, like that's just lost.
It's really about kind of what we were talking about, increasing the average ticket price.
For sure. And it's an easy add-on, you know, like you have it, people will pick it up and, you know, it's just sitting there. You know, you're not having to prep it. So no one has to cook it. You're just grabbing it off a shelf. Mm-hmm. So if you can do stuff like, if you can add things like that and promote them and have them sell regularly, it's a huge bonus.
How do you promote those things? Is it just showcasing it on the shelf? Do you go on forums and say, hey, check out my Tiki? It's like, is there a Tiki forum out there?
There are a bunch. When we do our mug, we'll definitely do a lot of that. We haven't released the glass yet, but when we do, we'll run a giveaway contest to get a bunch of eyes on it on Instagram. And then we'll serve, normally like what we've done before is we'll have a feature cocktail. And you have the option where it's like, you know, you can, the cocktail is this much or it's this much and you keep the glass.
Oh, I like that.
So it's like you get it, you see it either way, but you're like, oh, I could just keep this for like another $15.
Pizza My Heart and Willow Glen. Sorry, Pizza My Heart in general as a company. I think their slices are $5. Or if you pay $2 more, you get a t-shirt. Right? And I don't know if the t-shirts are at a loss. I don't know if they're paying less than $2 for the shirt. Either way, I'm sure it's chalked up to marketing. Every MF in San Jose probably has a Pizza My Heart t-shirt.
Yeah.
And, or even like the North Bay. It's just like, it's so easy to grab. They used to do Frisbees too. They used to like serve their pizzas on Frisbees. People would just like steal them and or throw them in the trash by accident.
Yeah.
But the t-shirts they were able to sell.
But you just see them everywhere.
But you see them everywhere.
You know, and it works. Like you're bringing it up now.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And you're, if you can get a great deal on the shirts, you up the average ticket price. But even if you don't, it's marketing.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Like we did our first shirt just before Christmas, and we went through like 200 of them in December.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's a huge add-on.
Yeah.
And then for Christmas, like from the middle of November till New Year's, we always do like a big like Christmas themed cocktail menu, and we get like a bunch of Christmas themed mugs. And that one, like we sell hundreds of those.
Wow. I imagine too, like you said, when you come out with with something of a collector's item, those Tiki fans that are already looking at your spot, that'll push them to go and make the trip, because they're already sort of earmarked, or like they have it bookmarked in their head that when I'm at your location, I'm going to go visit. But like now that they have the mug out, it kind of draws excitement.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Let's make that even more of a priority to go.
For sure.
In a way. Where are you located, by the way?
I'm in Hamilton. So we're probably like halfway between Toronto and Buffalo.
About an hour drive from each?
Yeah, close to that.
Cool. Designing a shirt, is that the shirt that you designed right there?
It is, yeah.
Did you design it yourself?
No, I didn't. I had the idea. I sent it out to people that are much better at art than I am.
Yeah. It seems like art's really big into your life. Can we talk about your tattoos?
Sure.
I noticed tattoos are really big in like the food industry. Did you get those before you were in food?
I had a bunch. I just kept adding on. But I have some for like each of my food businesses.
for clarification, each of your food businesses like passed?
Yeah. So like I had like a barbecue truck. I had a poke takeout place, and now I have the pizza place.
Got it. And but MyPie is the only one right now.
Yeah, that's the only one I'm running right now.
So which one's the one for MyPie? What is that?
It's like the Doge meme.
The Hawaiian shirt. Can you speak to the left?
So it's the Doge meme. The Doge, like the Shiba
Inu.
Is wearing a Hawaiian shirt and drinking a cocktail out of a tiki mug.
Did you buy Dogecoin?
I did very way back, like on Reddit.
It's freaking March 19, 2024. And I think it's up again.
Yeah, it's insane.
Okay.
Yeah, I got that for poke. I got that for tuna.
Tuna?
Yep.
What's your favorite cut?
I mean, you got to say, like, never go wrong with Otora.
Love it.
It's all good. Yeah. It's all good.
Okay.
Like, as long as, like, good tuna is amazing. Like, I went to Japan finally and ate so much tuna. Like, I went down to, can't remember the name of the market now. It's like the big fish market.
They
moved it, but, like, all the stalls outside are still there.
Sure.
But, like, you know, like you go into a place there and you just get like a huge bowl with like all kinds of tuna on it. It's ridiculously cheap compared to here. And it's so good.
Yeah. I had sushi last night.
Nice.
Sakana.
How's that?
It's cool. It just became a tradition. We stopped going to Vegas buffets, but this place is all you can eat. My wife and I have been going to all you can eat sushi joints because we met at a very young age and, you know, that was like the splurge for us.
Yeah.
It's like $30 for sushi at the time was very expensive and you could get a lot of it. And so it sort of just carried on. But as time has gone by, the all you can eat sushi joints in San Jose have just gone downhill. But when you come to Vegas, they're not bad. Like they have a great selection. They don't have too many restrictions and I still enjoy it to this day.
Nice. Yeah, there was a couple of places we were looking at, like over on, like in Chinatown, and they've got like Korean barbecue and like all you can eat, like Japanese, like shabu places. And they're so far ahead of like what we have where I'm from. It's like all you can eat wagyu. it's wild. Like the meat cuts look so good.
Well, they're trying to get that bigger ticket price because I think you know when you add those little things.
Yeah, no, it goes up. Like and they're smart. They do it in tiers, right?
Yeah,
you start at like $40, but like then you go in there and you're looking at it, and like the menu is like there's a lot of pictures.
Yeah,
and you're like you know it's like it's only another $30 and like.
Dude.
It's a lot, you know, by the time you get out of there, you're like $100 in.
There's a place that I do. I'm a sucker for all you can eat barbecue, Korean barbecue. I'm a sucker for all ace places, you know?
Yeah.
Korean barbecue and hot pot became a thing in San Jose. And like, you go and you experience it, you're like, fuck, this is so cool. And then you go and you try to cheap out and just get one or the other. It just doesn't hit the same. You know, I don't know if that's for you, but for me, it's just like, I have to get both.
Are you talking about like one place that does both?
Yeah.
So you have both at one table.
Yeah. Nice. It's so tight. It's a great concept.
I haven't been, a bunch of our kitchen guys went to a place, because one of our guys is Muslim and there's a place like, I think it's like an hour drive from us, but it's like all you can eat Korean barbecue and hot pot and it's halal.
All halal.
Yeah.
Dude, halal is getting big.
Oh yeah.
My favorite hot chicken joint in San Jose is Halal. There's a all you can eat Korean barbecue place Halal. And I'm just, there's a pop-in taqueria who the head owner or chef also owns a pizzeria Halal. The taqueria is Halal. I don't know if they're going to make the pizzeria Halal, but it's that's a trend.
Yeah,
let's explore
like
that.
The part of Canada where I'm in, like the GTA area, is very diverse. So like there's a lot of places.
That's cool.
It's definitely growing.
When it comes to tiki drinks, I have this like preconceived notion that they're all sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Are they?
No.
No.
No. They're like there's a weird history with them. Like when tiki bars first opened, a lot of the recipes were like, they were secrets. and like a couple of like the more popular bars. It's interesting. It was actually the bartenders who made all the drinks. They're all Filipino. And they were, it was like secret. Like they all worked in like the back and like they would just put the drink out through like a little window. And a lot of them didn't even know what the recipes were.
Interesting.
Everything was labeled like, you know, like this is mix one, mix two, mix three. And then only one person would know what went into those. So like they'd be putting them together, but very few people knew the actual recipes. And for a period of time, they were lost. So like the names of the drinks carried on. You see it a lot, like when you go into, you know, when you go to like, there were a lot of Chinese restaurants that ended up looking like tiki bars. And you know, when you go to a Chinese restaurant and you get the placemat and it's got all the cocktails on it, 99% of the time when you get a tiki drink from there, it's like, it's just made up. Like it's got the name, but like they're just making up some random drink. It's nothing like what the original recipe was. The thing like with tiki cocktails, they're actually very complex cocktails. Like a lot of different like spices, a lot of different juices. And like with us, like we do fresh juice every day. We make all our syrups in house. Like so, we're like doing syrup infusions. We tend to go like a step up in the quality of rum that we use for our cocktails. So, you know, like if you get the most basic stuff, it's just kind of, it's not terrible, but like, you know, you taste it, you taste a better rum in the drink. It makes a better cocktail. So like we are trying to make more quality cocktails.
Is there a pairing menu or is it like, do you recommend certain drinks with certain pizzas?
We haven't got to that yet, but that is one of the things that we want to do with the like with the new menu, with the changes to the menu.
Give me a quick rough idea of a pairing for tiki and pizza.
That's a tough. We haven't even started the work for that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, generally speaking, what would work with pizza? Is it a sweeter drink, a bitter drink? In your opinion, like, what do you personally like? When you're consuming both of your products?
I think with Detroit style pizza, you know, I think any drink that's cold and bright will really help like cut through the richness of it. And it's also kind of like a lot of how we try to balance out the flavors on some of our pizzas is like have something in there that's acidic. Because, you know, like it's a lot of cheese, it's a big crust, and it can be heavy flavors, so it can go a little one note if you're not trying to balance it out with acid.
Is there a mocktail culture where you're at, or in tiki bars in general?
I don't know in general, but I think I would say in general, like non-alcoholic and low alcohol cocktails are definitely on the upswing.
Hell yeah.
It's I'd say it's more of a culture shift too.
Yeah,
in that it's not weird now.
No,
it's not weird to like have someone ask for a non-alcoholic beer. I think it's like, it's not weird, like in friend groups.
Yeah.
You know, like I think people know to like, not, you know, like if you're in a group of people and you order like a non-alcoholic beer, no one's going to call you out on
shit.
It.
No, yeah, my family still does.
But I think that's changing.
I'm
like,
2 years.
Definitely like that was like,
yeah, it's changing.
Yeah.
They give me less shit. But it's been 2 years since I stopped drinking.
Nice.
I actually stopped drinking after Expo 2022 when I found out my wife was pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's been great. It's been a fun journey because mocktails are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Like they can come up with some crazy creations. They're complex. They just don't have the alcohol.
Yeah. I think it's just now like people are taking it more seriously. You know,
yeah.
It's not like something that's thrown together at the
for
last minute.
Sure.
Like it's like, oh yeah, great. Like let's make this guy a non-alcoholic cocktail. It's like people are making them, putting them on their menu and just caring about them.
Yeah.
So like we've got, I think, four on our menu right now.
Nice.
And like, they're good. They're good drinks.
Good. I encourage everyone listening to make a freaking mocktail because we're talking about it now. I think it's here to stay.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We do that. And like we do, I think we have a non-alcoholic canned cocktail. And then we do like a non-alcoholic mojito.
Use zero proof or something?
Sometimes we use a substitute. Sometimes we just go straight like juices and syrups.
Nice.
Just depends on what makes sense. I think sometimes you want to have that. You still want to have that kind of like bite feeling from alcohol, or like I'm not a big fan of all of the substitutes yet. They're definitely gotten better, but I think the ones that are supposed to be gin are the ones that are like the furthest along.
Yeah.
Because
I have that
one. I think it's the easiest to replicate that like herbaceous flavor than it is to like, you know, get that kind of like spicy bite that like you might get like out of a rum, or like that kind of like spicy afterbite. You know, like there's some we've tried and it's like, why would we even use this? Like it tastes like, you know, it's like a $40 bottle that tastes like a little like vaguely flavored sugar water.
My first bottle of wine was ass. I like almost spit it out. But this, thank you to my sister-in-law who was just so thoughtful and was like, this is a gift for you because you're not drinking. I'm like, thank you. And I was like, this is disgusting. But the zero proof gin that I came up on, really good. And it just brought me back talking about gin. My first time ever trying gin, I took a shot of it. And I didn't know you were really supposed to do that.
Yeah.
I almost spit that out.
Yeah. Gin is, I feel like everyone has that like high school alcohol that like you got really drunk on and you're like, never again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gin is that for me. It's like I've just never given it a second chance. I've never come back to it.
Real quick, I want to know, why did you switch barbecue, poke, pizza?
So barbecue, I had the food truck. Food trucks where I am really don't do much in the winter.
Yeah,
so I needed something to do in the winter. So I started the poke place. We ended up being the first poke place in Canada. I had no idea. And I had no idea if it would work, if people would like it. No one had heard of it really. So there was like a lot of, you know, like we would just call it, we were saying it's like sushi in a bowl or like a sushi salad. And that was like, that worked to get people's attention. And it really took off. And then pizza, like, I mean, I wasn't really like looking to switch. Like I had the takeout places and they just didn't survive COVID. One of them was in a location where 90% of our customers worked in offices.
And, was that the poke place?
Yeah. Yeah. Like our main location was like in, like kind of in the middle of like a block of offices.
And you're
like
selling a salad, just, lunch crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. We were only open. We were open like 11 to 6. So like we were 2/3 of our business was lunch, and we'd get like a huge line for lunch. And then we get like people kind of trickling in the rest of the day. But you know, like those offices just, they're gone. Like they're closed. The people that are back, like I still talk to my customers. The people that are back like 1 to 2 days a week. So like,
it's rough.
Yeah. The market that we were in is, you know, it was just kind of gutted for traffic. And then it just came to a point where like I had the other location running, and it just came to a point where I had to kind of like, it was a choice between working every second of the day to keep both places going, or just kind of focusing on my pie. So I decided to close the other one. And it was, you know, it was a small takeout location that, again, like I had built most of it myself and like opened it for like $20,000, which is not nothing, but it was fully paid off and, you know, it was fine. It wasn't like a huge thing to walk away from.
In running three concepts at the same time, what was the biggest aha moment for you?
That I'm not cut out to run three places at the same time, and that it's just better for me personally, you know, I know guys that can do it, or they have the right people to do it. I just really love having the one place and concentrating on it. And, you know, like being open 4 nights a week, you know, like when you run your own business, no matter what, like I'm doing stuff days we're closed. But I always have at least one day a week where I don't think about work.
What do you do?
Lately, I finally like got back into snowboarding. I stopped snowboarding when I started my food business because I had no money, and then I had no time, and then I gained a lot of weight, and I finally got most of that off. So I've been going out again. That, reading, relaxing.
Good for you.
Doing all non-work things.
Amazing. Final question for you. There's no right or wrong answer. You could take this however way you want. What's good, though?
Being here. I love coming here. This is the third time I've come out here. It's always cool meeting new people, like, you know, getting different perspectives on what we're doing and getting ideas and just hanging out, seeing, just, you know, it's just like there's an energy of like being with so many people that are like in the same place as you and like excited to like be excited about what they're doing. I think if you weren't excited about what you're doing, you would come here. You'd just sit at home and be not excited about your life. But yeah, it's fun. The competition, I love, you know, like seeing people that I talk to online and chatting with them and just hanging out.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me.
Well, there you have it, my conversation with Salar of MyPie. Salar, MyPie, my guy, thank you so, so much for being on the show. I genuinely, genuinely, genuinely love seeing another Filipino brother killing it. Now I'm just saying, honestly, you have a great story. You have a great work ethic. And I am jealous that you are so handy, that you are so artistic and creative. And I really, really, really want to go check out your spot one day, maybe on my next trip to the Niagara Falls. Thank you so much for being on the show. To you, the listener, if you loved what you heard, and I'm sure you did, reach out to Salar. Instagram is going to be in the show notes. Do it. Let him know what's good, though. I appreciate you for listening. I love you. Please share the episode and leave a rating if you haven't done so already, especially if you enjoyed this show. Till next time. Peace.
Do you want a chance to win a $250 Uni gift card? Well, this is how you do it. Within the next 3 months, if you purchase something from uni.com using my affiliate link, send me your receipt. Each receipt that you send me, whether it's yours or a friend's or a neighbor's, will give you one entry into a raffle that will be giving away a $250 Uni gift card. That's all you have to do. All right. Happy buying and best of luck. And thank you for supporting me and my show sponsors.